quite frankly, what you've pointed to is the big problem in the craft distilling industry right at the moment, which is a glut.
This project really is sort of a love letter to Australian wine.
We want to bring people back into rum and not scare them off.
A maritime Tassie single malt whisky felt like the right thing for the three of us to do.
In a perfect world, all the best grapes from the best vineyards would go into the hands of the best winemakers. Doesn't always happen that way.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Few Australian distillery launches in 2023 have been greeted with the excitement surrounding Warbs Harbour in Bishano, Tasmania. It's easy to see why. The distillery's striking location in a former oyster hatchery on the rugged Tassie coast promises a true maritime expression of Australian single malt whisky. The founders bring with them some pretty impressive pedigree in both distilling and business generally. Head distiller Rob Polmere was previously head of production at Lark Distillery and before that, head distiller at Overeem. He's banded together with our guests this episode, his brother Tim Polmere and Tim's wife Beck, who in 2015 successfully exited an e-commerce business, Flat Tummy Tea. Since our conversation, Warbs Harbour has revealed the identity of its distributor, Proof & Company, which also represents brands including Never Never Gin, Ferron Cognac, Plantation Rum, and more. Well, Tim and Beck Polmere, thanks so much for joining us on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Thanks for having us, James.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Tim, it was great to meet you at the Tasmanian Whisky and Spirits Association conference last year, and I want to commend you on your humility because we sat next to each other and you mentioned that you had a distillery that was getting off the ground, but you didn't really tell me anything about what a spectacular location it is and how unique the location is, which really kind of, you know, was relevant to the presentation that I was giving at the conference.
Well, I was sitting in a room full of great distillers from Tasmania, both some of the kings of the distilling industry. So I think it's wise to be humble about our new approach to the industry.
Guys, maybe give me a bit of background on, you know, how you became interested in whisky. And am I right in saying that there might be some kind of familial connection to the Overeems in some way?
There is, yes. This branch is back a long time ago. Both Beck and I, who are husband and wife, we represent a little bit more of the business and marketing side of Warbs Harbour. But it's Rob, our brother, well, my brother, that's got a long history in making whisky in Tasmania. He worked as head distiller for Overeem and learnt the trade under Casey Overeem back in the day. And from there, he moved on to Lark Distillery as well as head of production. We've also been long-time friends with the Overeems and absolutely love talking anything whisky and else with Mark and Jane.
For sure, who we've obviously had on the podcast previously. And so how was Warbs Harbour conceived? Because I believe that you guys did have a previous business together that was quite successful. The exit from that business, is that being what's funded the establishment of this awesome distillery?
Yes, that's absolutely been a big part of it. Obviously, over the years, Tim and I had been talking to Rob a lot about whisky and learning a lot from him, and he'd come around and say, try this. And so, you know, our journey into whisky had evolved quite naturally over the years. But you're right in saying we had a successful e-commerce business in the past, which we'd sold, and we'd fell pregnant and moved back to Tassie. So we were living in Perth just for a couple of years running that business. And so Tim and I were really wanting to look at our next thing, and we really wanted to be in Tassie and do something that was Tasmanian. And over the years of just talking to Rob and seeing his passion and his knowledge and his experience, and it was just one of those fortuitous timings that we were in the position that in the right place to do this distillery. Rob was in the right place and he was ready and he was excited. And, you know, we took the leap into starting this distillery together. We're all ocean lovers. And when we started talking about the type of whisky that we'd like to make, Rob was very much passionate about the style that he wanted to make. He knew how to make it. He knew what he wanted to make. And so for us, a maritime Tassie single malt whisky was a very natural progression. It felt like the right thing for the three of us to do.
And how did you find the site in Bishano, which I understand used to be called Warbs Harbour?
Yes, it's an old tail that one. It's actually the original town name of Bishano, Warbs Harbour. It stems back a couple of hundred years ago and connects to this beautiful Aboriginal called Warbitabar, who was renowned as a town hero after she saved a couple of sealers that were drowning out to sea. And so the town named, you know, recognised this heroics and named the town after her, Warbs Harbour, until colonisation occurred and it was renamed Bishano in about mid-1800s. And we love the idea of kind of connecting to that story. And, you know, we've actually got Indigenous heritage ourselves and, yeah, just love the idea of, you know, in this day and age of being able to tell that story through the distillery. But, yeah, the site itself, we actually had a shack or a holiday house type thing up in the town that we'd often visit. And so we're big fans of being in Bishano, fishing and diving and all those sort of things, surfing especially. But there was this beautiful old oyster hatchery sitting right on the water. And we looked at it one day and we sort of said, far out, imagine making that into a distillery. And we knocked on the door because we knew it was a shut down sort of oyster hatchery. It hadn't been running for a few years. Anyway, we got in touch with them and yeah, one thing led to another and we're able to acquire this amazing building that's literally got the waves kind of lapping onto the pillars of the front door. So it's we're pretty lucky.
And that is where your barrel store is accommodated as well?
Exactly, yeah. We've got the stills here, the brew house. We've got about 800 barrels that are all within, you know, a stone's throw. In fact, probably on average, say 10 metres, 20 metres from the actual ocean. So it's a super saline environment, very salty. In fact, today we're doing a bit of a maintenance day here at the distillery because which need to occur fairly often. Rob is literally out there repainting the silo base for about the fourth time since we've been here in 5 years because the metal is just rusting away and everything in this distillery is rusting away. The barrel hoops themselves, you can see this layer of rust all over them and it's sort of the bane of our lives here, but it's also the very character and the reason why we wanted to be here and mature all those barrels in amongst that super saline environment. And this is something that, you know, the Scottish have been doing for hundreds of years over there. Some of the greats of Isla and Talisker's and those kind of guys, but an old Pulteney. But in Australia, you know, and especially in Tasmania, a land surrounded by quite a wild ocean, especially up here on the coastline, we get sizable swells rolling in here and storms. And it's a very wild, rugged kind of coastline. And we just loved the idea of being in amongst that. And then really talking to that provenance within our spirit itself.
Yeah, and tell me, like, where are you at with the maturation profile of the barrels? Like, when did you sort of put your first barrels down and how advanced are things? Because you've just put out your first whiskey, haven't you, just in the last few months?
Yes, a couple of months ago we released the first official Warbs Harbour first releases and we started distilling those about 4 years ago after getting the building about 5 years ago. Currently, most of our barrels that are coming out are in about a 60-litre sort of size cask, and then they grow in terms of size and age. We like a good stable sort of maturation, so we're after very stable temperatures, which you get when you're right on the coastline. It's one of the big kind of benefits that we get from being this maritime whiskey is we're in a very stable environment, which is kind of the opposite to many distilleries and what they celebrate in Australia, which are all about like high fluctuations of temperature, which creates or forces maturation faster effectively as you get highs and lows in temperature, forcing faster extraction. But here it's a sort of probably more similar climate to Scotland where you get, you know, more of a stable temperature base because you don't really get frosts down on the ocean side and you don't really get the high temperatures as well like on a hot day. So we find we've got a nice, yeah, stable kind of climate to mature in, which allows for slightly longer maturation. So, you know, a lot of people in a 50-litre sort of size cask might pull that out after only, you know, 2.5 years or so, 3 years. But, yeah, we've pushed that out to 3.5, 4 years. The regime with our 100-litre sort of size casks is, you know, a minimum of 5, 5.5, 6 years, and then 200s, et cetera, you know, of course, longer again.
And tell me about the flavour profile that's coming through. Are you seeing that maritime element in the whiskies already?
Yes, maritimeness comes through in varying ways. there's definitely like the obvious is it got that sort of brininess to it? Does it actually have this sort of saltedness to it at all? And I mean, we like to think of that not as, you know, whiskey that's salty. We like to look at it like how salt is used in seasoning, you know, much like when a cocktail maker is using a saline solution to enhance different flavors within that cocktail, or much like when you're using salt when you're roasting potatoes in the oven, you're not after necessarily like a roasted sort of salty potato. It's about enhancing different flavors, and we're sort of seeing that. Yes, there's some brininess, especially evident in a less cask-dominant whiskey like an American Oak, ex-bourbon, but you'll also see the salt enhance different things like the raisins and the port in a different way and add like a savouriness, for instance, to something sweet, which has helps to balance it. So there's, yeah, varying things that that provenance is having on the actual whiskey itself.
And when you said that Rob, you know, had a really clear idea of the whiskey that he wanted to make, apart from the maritime location, what were the other elements to that in terms of the various production stages, including the maturation and the sort of barrels that he was interested in working with?
Tasmanian whiskey, to us, has got that beautiful, rich, oily kind of character through that barley that we have in Tasmania, and that was absolutely part of what we wanted to achieve in our whiskey, and that's always been a big part of our vision for the actual whiskey character itself, and we get that through, yeah, the barley, but it's also through our equipment, you know, using Peter Bailey Napalua stills that are more squat and, you know, that classic Tasmanian shape allows us to achieve that. But, yes, it was always creating like a nice, rich and deep character sort of flavoursome whiskey. We've got three different kind of core line products. The first is what we call the Warbs Original, mostly using American Oak ex-bourbon casks, although there's a layer of tawny port French oak in there as well. It just gives it this little bit of a raisiny sort of nose and finish. But that one's at 43% and we use, mostly American oak. Like I said, the Port Storm is the second one in the core line, which is mostly French oak tawny. But where there is this marriage of just a touch of this American oak ex-bourbon in that, which kind of helps it give those, you know, beautiful American oak kind of spices and vanillas to that sort of core raisiny sort of French oak tawny cask. And then the third product in our core line is called our Founders Reserve. And because we use port in all three of our core series there, we can go through and select the best tawny port casks in the distillery and save them. It's kind of what we call the Founders Reserve, because we reserve these casks for that whiskey. And that's bottled at 62%. And it's definitely got like an extra step up in terms of depth, oils and richness. So, yeah, mostly American oak, ex-bourbon, and mostly French oak tawny casks to make up our core line. We've also used a pair of sherry, which we have used in limited releases so far and plan to more so. And we've also got an array of, you know, limited releases going forward in different kind of casks as well.
And, you know, you're happy with the whiskies that you've put out on the market. You know, they've been mature in the smaller format oak. Are you kind of happy that they're representative of the style that you're looking for? And how do you feel that's going to evolve as those larger format casks come into play in the future?
Yes, definitely happy with, and it's very much what we wanted to make. It was a very happy day when we were able to release those whiskies and sit back and honestly smile and think, this is what we set out to make, like this beautiful Tasmanian whiskey. We were quite confident in making good whiskey, obviously having Rob's background in making whiskey for some of the great brands like Overeem and Lark. But when we sat back and were able to taste our whiskey, yes, definitely happy. And we've seen great feedback from all sorts of people, industry, as well as down to the, you know, the consumer as well. So it's, very happy.
Now, you guys from your previous business must have some really useful skill sets with, you know, the e-commerce and marketing and that type of thing that a lot of distilleries might not have that in their wheelhouse. So, Beck, is that kind of what your main contribution will be on the marketing side?
Yes, absolutely. So we're very fortunate that we've got a good team. Firstly, we're family. So, you know, we know the good and the bad and the ugly of each other, which, you know, always helps. But also the three of us have very different skill sets. So Rob is in charge of everything inside the bottle. He's, you know, very technical, obviously, an incredible distiller. And so we all collaborate a lot, but at the end of the day, he makes the product. Tim and I very much, we say, do everything outside the bottle. So Tim's big on strategy, numbers. He's the visionary of the business. And I'm much more on the forward-facing side, things like social media. If you receive an email, it's from me, communication, bit of photography. So that's kind of the breakdown of the team and the way that it works. And that's, I think, why it works so well. And like you said, Tim and I have bought marketing and online experience and branding experience from past businesses and paired it with Rob's, you know, beautiful product. And so that's definitely benefited us, yeah, set us in good stead.
Being in a location like where you are, it really does help your job, doesn't it, you know, for social media, just because when I look at your page on Instagram, it's just such a beautiful setting and it's very easy to tell a compelling story about the provenance of your whiskies.
Well, something that was really important to us day one was to create a really genuine and authentic story. And so we wanted to set ourselves up best to do that. And fortunately, it makes it quite easy to get great content and photography because we've been lucky enough to get this location. And really, we just have to go outside and take a great shot, which is quite easy here. That was part of that vision. It's just if we do everything super genuine and authentic in how we roll here, then we can't really go wrong. We don't want to have a marketing story as such. Like we don't want to use that marketing terminology in a way. We just want to go outside and showcase what we're up to each day.
I think the other side of that is we see our whiskey as the story of the place, the story of the people. It's provenance influenced a lot as well. And Bishano has such a beautiful story. It's an old fishing town full of incredible characters. There's only 1,000 people who live here. You know, we're 2 hours plus from any city, or from Hobart and Launceston, from small cities. So there's so much history here. And for us to be able to tell that story, so the story of, like Tim was explaining, Warba Jabbar, and also the people who live here and the rich history of the old fishing town, that's been really important to us as well. But the beautiful setting obviously helps.
Tell me how you went about the packaging, because I think it looks really beautiful.
Yeah, again, we just really wanted to strip it back and tell a story of the place. And so we're inspired by the crested tern that migrates to here, and there's thousands of them that live on the island opposite us, and that's on the packaging. And we wanted to strip it back to just look nice and maritime and clean, and just have some, you know, copy on there that talks to the place. But yes, we definitely worked with some good designers as well to be able to pull that vision to life. If for all those guys in the industry who have done packaging would know it takes way longer and there's way more to it than you think.
I think for me, our packaging, we wanted to represent our brand but also ourselves. We are a newer distillery, and so we wanted it to reflect a more modern distillery. We're all in our 30s, so it's a more modern and a more young distillery, but also it's really important to us to still be true to what traditional whiskey is and what traditional whiskey drinkers love. So for us, it was the intersection of the maritime meets a more modern looking brand, but also that still felt and looked like whiskey.
Have you already got your visitor centre open there?
Yes, we run tours and tastings sort of daily here. Everything so far is booked by appointment, although we are likely down the track to have more of an open cellar door. But, yeah, we have some great people through. Obviously, we're a few hours away from anywhere, so there's, you know, it's not like we've got thousands of people knocking on our door. It's a destination. But we also have some great partnerships around. Like there's a high-end accommodation luxury lodge down the road called Sapphire, which a lot of Tasmanians would know of, which we have a great partnership with, and they love sending their guests about 3 times a week to us to do a bit of an exclusive tour for them. So, yeah, we've got tours happening, we've got tastings happening, and down the line we're likely to have more of an open sort of cellar door as well.
Do you have the space there to do something pretty substantial for the cellar door, or is there not really the opportunity for that?
Yeah, we absolutely have the space here. We've got nearly 5 buildings effectively that sit literally on the edge of the ocean, and so we do have space to do that. Our priority to date has been to create a really special and authentic experience for a smaller number of people, which is why we've gone down the line of guided tastings by booking, and the maximum we do is, you know, 8 people. And same with our tours at the moment, which are running daily. But absolutely, we know that we've got a really special spot, and we know that when people come here, they fall in love with what we're doing, our brand, our team, and of course our whiskey. So we are excited to explore having a more open cellar door in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. And sort of in some respects, one of the advantages is we're in a location where there's not like a long list of things to do. So definitely. And it's this very seasonal location. It's one of Tasmania's sort of favourite places to visit as a holiday destination. And being sort of in close proximity to the famous Freycinet area, it also attracts kind of a fair bit of tourism. So yeah, definitely down the line, we expect to create great experiences, and which is one of the reasons we didn't say before, but our original building that we got 5 years ago was an oyster hatchery, and we were lucky enough to get the neighbouring buildings, which was an old abalone farm, for about 70 years produced abalone and other fish processing, and just a couple of years ago we were able to acquire that one as well, which gave us this whole sort of whole precinct of an area and also allowed us to expand not only our bond storage capacity, which was needed, but also we created this really nice tasting room in one of the buildings, which overlooks the rest of the distillery and the water. You know, you can be in there some days and seeing, yeah, dolphins just right nearby, going past. There's seals that live on the rock. There's these crested terns by the thousand squawking away on the rocks, and you can be sitting there looking at all that, having a nice Tasmanian whiskey. So it is a pretty unique experience.
Absolutely. And tell me how else like people are going to be able to get their hands on your whiskies.
Yeah, we're currently in many venues around Tasmania, currently in not many at all in the rest of Australia, but that's largely due to the fact that we only launched a couple of months ago and we haven't been out and done that yet. But we are soon to sign on, no doubt, with a national distributor, and then also looking at export markets, because we do have a decent amount of whiskey under maturation. We're probably in that mid-size distillery sort of size. I think 10 years ago we would have been a big distillery in Australia, but obviously these days there's some much, much bigger distilleries in Australia, and so we're probably sitting in that mid-size. And so, yeah, we'll have a good enough consistent supply going forward where we'll be able to get into markets all around the world, hopefully, and as we grow and scale up as well, we look forward to being able to build reputation around those products and then also do limited releases on top.
I guess it's too early to sort of divulge who that distributor is, but how difficult was it finding someone?
Good question, because distribution companies, if you'll ask around the industry, the common kind of response is everyone's sort of not exactly happy with their distributor and often are looking to change, which is the opposite of what you want to hear. Yes, finding a good one, it comes down to how good your brand is and how good your offering and how good your model is and all that as well, right? Like obviously a distribution company needs you to support them well with great product, with a great brand. So for us, it's been, yeah, of course, like a challenge like everyone else to get a good one. I think there's plenty of them that you could sort of just sign up tomorrow maybe, but selecting someone that you can really genuinely work with well to produce a good long-term growth is a challenge. But yeah, we've got some great little connections that we're working on right now, so which will be revealed down the track. Something that we've done over the years is build a great following of people on social media, but as well on our email list. When we release, we go out to our email list first. We've got like a first access kind of membership email list, and often things sell in great speed, yeah, when we're releasing. And that email list is, you know, one of these key channels that any distillery or any brand at all obviously favours, and we're certainly the same. And it's something that we really are focusing on to look after those consumers that are looking after us and are loving it. And those whiskey fans become ambassadors for you. And I think that's an important thing for any distillery to really harness, is those sort of like the key lovers of your brand and those that can really get behind you.
Well, maybe just before we wrap up, take us through the pipeline of new releases that people can look out for over the next few months.
We've got a couple of exciting things happening. One other thing that we didn't mention, but it comes back to something that's unique to us. One of the processes within making whiskey is the use of yeast. And Rob's background is, before he was distilling with Overeem and Casey there in his shed, he did a master's in marine science. And so biology, it was a real love of his back in the day. And so he's been cultivating his own yeast here at the distillery and growing it up literally from cells under the microscope into test tubes, into conical flasks, and then into eventually 300 litres worth to be able to pitch, you know, a couple of thousand litres of wort with. And that's something that excites Rob for sure. And, you know, anyone that's right into that technical side of whiskey also loves chatting to Rob about the differences in flavour it can make. Obviously, yeast is all about yield, but equally as important about flavour and the nuances that you can create and the different new make spirits. It's really interesting when guys like Casey Overeem or Patrick McGuire, who's been a big fan and supporter, we've been a big fan of him and he's been a good supporter of us over the years. And when he comes up and gets in the lab there with Rob and tries these different new make spirits made with different yeasts that Rob's been able to cultivate up himself. Yeah, it's one of those magic moments that, you know, it's a pinch me sort of moment. And we're lucky to have Rob there with that sort of expertise from the past. So just it's another nice little sort of string to the bow.
Absolutely. And so are you using exclusively those yeasts or have you started out using sort of more conventional yeasts and that'll be a tool that you have to just start bringing in more nuance as you go forward?
Creating your own yeast or cultivating your own yeast is a very labour-intensive thing and something that can create nice little subtle differences. But, yeah, we use conventional, you know, classic M1 dry yeast for like a large portion of what we do at the moment. And the yeast experimentation and cultivating yeasts will be more of limited release.
When we first set up our distillery, as we were renovating the old oyster hatchery, we've actually built Rob his own lab right in the middle of the distillery. And that was really important from day one for him to be able to create the product that he wanted and the product that we set out to make. And it's also one of those things that because we are a newer distillery, because we're a family-run mid-sized distillery, we have the freedom to be able to experiment with these flavours and with these yeast strains. And that's something that, you know, a lot of the bigger distilleries can't do. And we also want to make things as hyper-local as possible. So that comes back to making our own yeast, using peat that's come from down the road, local collaborations like with Apsley Gorge Vineyard.
We just released a limited release last week, which is a collaboration with a local winery. And this winery isn't just any winery. It's a much-loved vineyard in Tasmania called Apsley Gorge Vineyard. And they create arguably Tassie's best Pinot. And it's well-loved around Australia if you can get your hands on it. It's an expensive bottle, but it's worth every drop. And we did a collaboration with their Pinot barrels mix where we used a pair of sherry casks in a couple of different ways, and I won't go into it too much, but that was something that just happened. But in the future, one exciting project that we're doing here is working with a local peat source. So again, like back to that genuine story, we just wanted, you know, with everything we do, we don't want to sort of shortcut things. And when it comes to peat, really, we didn't even like the idea of using like a Highland sort of Tasmanian peat, let alone like importing sort of Scottish peated grain. But we found a salt marsh that's just down the road from us with this really unique peat source, because the salt marsh, very different from a sphagnum moss kind of organic peat that's found in the Highlands. This salt marsh is filled with the local melaleuca tree and coastal reeds and this sort of salty succulent. So that's a very different organic smokiness. And we've done a lot of different testing. And you go up and down the river, and up the river, obviously, it's more fresh, and down the river, it's more salty. And so we've done a lot of different sampling and currently have many casks that are peated with this very source of peat under maturation. And so that's something exciting to look out for from us down the track.
Awesome. Well, before we wrap up, where can people sign up to the mailing list? Maybe just a quick plug for the website, where to find that link.
WarbsHarbourWhiskey.com is where you'll find out all about us. And on social media, of course, on Instagram, Facebook, you'll find Warbs Harbour Whiskey as well. Sign up to our first access email list to hear what's going on. You'll be getting emails direct from Beck every now and again. One thing I'd like to say, actually, before we go, James, is a little plug for you, because the Drinks Adventures podcast, like, I listen to, I know, fairly religiously. Like, I'm a big fan, and I love what's coming out these days, especially the quality, but also the consistency and the quantity of your content. I think it's awesome. So well done, because you're part of the fabric and the glue that makes this industry in Australia, that binds it together and that keeps us learning off each other.
Oh, thanks, mate. That's lovely to hear that feedback. And look, I've really enjoyed chatting to you both today, and really, above all, I just can't wait to come and visit and sit in that tasting room and taste your whiskies.
Yeah, please do. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, welcome anytime.